Good evening. This is Rick.
And I'm Mark. Today is Tuesday, March 8th, International Women's Day. To all lovely ladies out there, our love goes out to you. And today we're going to talk about...
We're going to be discussing I Saw the Devil, which is pretty much the most beautifully composed, most sinister, evil revenge film you'll ever see, which is saying something because it's from Korea. After that, we will segue into our soundtrack segment. And then we will close out with our DVD critique of the week. And that's Edward Zwick's...
Return.
His return
to romantic comedy and Love and Other Drugs, featuring often naked Jake Gyllenhaal and Anne Hathaway, among other actors that are not worth talking about. Now, Top Dollar Roz is the man. Listen to the man.
I'm Papa Joe Jackson. I don't give a fraction. I'm what you pay to see, like a paralyzed backstreet. Welcome to the faction. Let me bring the facts. You don't want drama, cause I bring the action. Ask him, top dollars like a Unabomber. I got him all scared in the hotel Rwanda. Trying to survive, I'm suggesting that you hide, cause I'm performing whack.
And we're back. First things first, before we start the review of I Saw the Devil, we are having some technical difficulties this week. So we are not recording in our normal studio. We have been displaced, but much like, you know, people in impoverished countries, we are finding a way to bring you this podcast. Mark, how did you feel about the movie?
About I Saw the Devil.
Yes.
Well, let me run down. This movie has a lot of talent behind it. The director is Kim Ji-woon, who directed A Tale of Two Sisters, The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, and I believe The Host. He directed The Host, which was a monster movie, which our producer loves, just loves The Host. And now this is his newest film after The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, which attempted to reinvent the spaghetti western into what Kim Ji-woon, I think, referred to as a kimchi western. Kimchi is, of course, the really spicy signature Korean dish. I think it's peppers and cabbage.
I'm a huge kimchi fan.
Are you? I've never had kimchi, but like there's a similar dish in Russian cuisine that I partake. Now, this stars two Korean superstars, genuine superstars, Lee Byung-hun, who a lot of people will actually not know, but know from G.I. Joe. He played...
the Bad Ninja.
Yes, the Bad Ninja.
Can we refer to him?
Storm Shadow?
Can we refer to him as the Bad Ninja?
No, is it Storm Shadow? Yes, it's Storm Shadow. He played Storm Shadow. He was the guy dressed in white. And Ray Park played Snake Eyes. Snake Eyes. See, I'm good with G.I. Joe, even though I hated the movie. I watched it five times, once in Spanish, while on a flight to Japan. And the other star is Choi Min-sik, which a lot of cult film fans will undoubtedly know as the lead character of Old Boy, another Korean revenge drama. It's like he said in our Let Me In episode, Swedish vampire films. So you have Swedish vampire films, and you have Korean revenge dramas. And this film is... I don't even know where to begin.
I'm going to have to get in for a second and just say that I have only seen a handful of Korean movies. All of them have been revenge films. All of them have been grotesquely violent. And when I spoke to someone recently who was Asian, I was talking to them about Korean films, and they started to talk to me about like a romantic comedy drama. And I was like, wait, they make those? Like those?
I personally only talk to Asians about Korean films because I feel like they'll be most knowledgeable about it, Rick.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was sarcasm.
Okay. Well, I mean,
please
I
continue.
I'm just saying, just because he's Chinese, he may not like Hong Kong films. Like each, you know, subculture.
You're defending yourself now for my sarcasm.
Well, deservedly so. But back to I Saw the Devil. It's just the movie starts out showing a series of brutal murders.
Spoilers.
Mark, you don't even need to
say
it. That's
what we
break down films.
A pregnant woman is killed in the first 10 minutes of the film. Brutally.
Yes.
By Choi Min-sik, who is a serial killer. And I can't pronounce his name because I'm bad with foreign names, including my own. Now, that said... her husband happens to be a special agent played by Lee Byung-hyun, who is extremely well trained and sets on a path of finding the serial killer, and that's where the movie gets interesting. Now, I should go out of my way to say I did not like the film. It's not a favorite of mine, and I found it largely uninvolving and occasionally boring. Rick, do you want to just kind of throw some of your opinions at before we get more into it?
I'm just going to say pretty much how I felt about the whole project, in that it's beautifully composed.
Absolutely.
I felt it well acted. The person I saw it with felt the acting was kind of cheesy and hokey, and there's one scene where the bad ninja from G.I. Joe cries towards the end of the film, and she started laughing. So
that was
her effect. But I thought it was well acted. I thought there's great choreography. There's a lot of fighting in this movie, which the fighting is very interesting. But really what it is it's the most beautifully composed torture porn you will ever see. Some people believe Inglourious Basterds was torture porn. I say no. I say you want torture porn, you go right to the source. I saw the devil.
Okay. I have to disagree with you right off the bat. I don't feel the film is torture porn because, and this is where I was getting at before we jumped in with our opinions, because I feel like you should know how we feel about the film because it'll color our in-depth discussion, which is what we do at the Brooklyn Film Theorist, BK Film Theorist with an S, .blogspot.com. Now, what is interesting about I Saw the Devil is that this agent sets out on tracking the serial killer down. And what would happen in most American films is he would track him down and murder him, you know, and vengeance is completed and all is right, but nothing will bring his wife and kids back. Or he'll, like, give them up to the cops and say, you know, I understand now, I could never be like you. This is different. He tracks him down and he brutalizes him and chooses at the last second not to kill him. He plants a GPS inside him, making him swallow it. The killer is not aware of this. And the killer goes off and does his killing because he's a beast. This is not a well-developed character. This is a man who cannot control his impulses. If he sees a woman, he is going to try to rape her. And I'm pretty sure every woman he comes across in that film is some of the most unpleasant sequences in the film have to do with this guy putting his serial killer moves.
Wait, could we talk about this though? There are like several sequences in the film where he goes to rape a woman, and this is where American films are, I feel like, a little more based in logic, is that when a woman is approached in like a dark area, or even if it's in public, which is a scene in a hospital, if a guy comes at them to try to rape them, which is obvious, like in this film, they will scream and they will put up a fight. Women in this film are just so subservient, and I understand that there's differences in the culture, but we need to think for a second, and I wanted to start laughing at that. Like, that's not a reaction you should have in a dramatic, like, thriller film.
I found that, I mean, I agree with you, I found it somewhat lacking in logic, but I also feel the whole film is a stylistic exercise. And,
so is Michael Bay's, what was that movie, The Island? That was a stylistic exercise.
Well, every movie that Michael Bay has ever made is a stylistic exercise. But here, you're talking about a filmmaker whose films' style is married to substance in such a way that you can't separate the two. And I Saw the Devil is filled with set pieces of this agent tracking the serial killer down and exacting more and more excruciating punishments on him as he, I guess, attempts to outrun fate, so to speak, because the agent sees himself as having made a promise to his dead wife to make the serial killer suffer as much pain as possible. And that concept to me is interesting. But what I'm trying to say is the movie is a series of set pieces that are overly complicated, that are aided by astounding cinematography, that are choreographed and blocked out and just really exemplary work. This is what a thriller should be. This is the real brutality of it. There's even dark comedy in places, which is very odd for this extremely long film.
If I didn't know what you were just discussing right now, though, you could have just been discussing Hostel. How did you feel about Eli Roth's Hostel?
I didn't like it, but I did. But
what you just said was like the description. It's really well shot. It's well composed. People can say what they want about Eli Roth. He knows how to make a frame look good. He knows how to build tension. It's just the problem is
Hostel. You're asking me what separates this from Hostel? It separates this from genre of torture porn?
Yeah.
The fact that on a base level, this film tries to explore the logical, not logical, let's say emotional consequences of the purest form of revenge possible. It's not a complex film at all. It's simple plotting. It's a cat and mouse game. I read a review that called it the purest example. I think it was Fear.net, maybe, or Arrow in the Head. I forget. But called it the purest example of cat and mouse storytelling ever. And I think, I don't know if it's the purest example. I try to avoid hyperbole unless I'm talking about The Room. But it's definitely, you know, a very simplistic concept, just overdrawn at what, like two, what are we talking about?
It's two and a half hours. And it felt
2 hours and 40 minutes. It felt
2 hours and 24 minutes technically.
Felt like at least 2 hours.
God, I was in the theater just doing time checks. I have to say, it was just really brutal on me. There's a scene in this movie where they show a guy cutting someone's Achilles open, and that's done in Hostel.
That made me wince. And but in Hostel, it's so over the top. I never really...
Yeah, it was almost funny in that. And in this movie, it's just disgusting.
Yeah,
it's just
pretty
like,
awful.
And there
pretty
was
awful.
People in the theater. This is one thing I have to talk about. People in the theater were laughing at this film, and I don't know what kind of audience, like, this film was meant for, but people were really laughing at it and really finding it funny. And I'm sorry, I just did not find this funny. I don't care if that makes me sound like an old person or something, or if I'm missing the joke. I get the joke. It's just, that's not funny to me. Watching someone get ridiculously tortured that we don't even know who they really are. Like, I understand the devil character. All right, yeah, they're being tortured. And yeah, he's done all these bad things.
I wouldn't call him the devil character. I think the title is more subversive than that. It's sort of that old, if you look into abyss, the abyss will look back into you.
But I mean, so many, you know, okay, what this movie is, this is the rich man's Devil's Reject. Because Devil Rejects had the same plot. It had the same plot. The cat and the mouse between the cop who starts out good and goes insane because his brother has been murdered, and then becomes worse than the villains.
I don't even remember Devil's Rejects. I just remember the Freebird aided finale, which I loved, loved, loved.
But I mean, really, it's the same plot. And whereas, like, people discount Rob Zombie's film for whatever reason because, you know, maybe they don't like his, like, schlock, you know, rock music he made. But this movie, which it's presented to American audience like a prestige piece, I just found it high-class torture porn. I'm sorry.
So what would you give it?
I would give this movie 1.5 stars out of 4. I was really disappointed.
1.5. Wow, okay. I would give it 5 or 6. 6 stars. 6 stars? I don't do stars. I would give it 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
That ending, which we should talk about, I feel like, really upset for me because the payoff is so effective, and it truly is, you know, revenge as a concept in film is overused, but in this film, the kind of revenge that it accomplishes is pretty astounding.
No, I mean,
the final notes of the film reach a level that I was really a little bit shocked to find personally.
How, since I haven't seen any of his other films, how would you compare this to some of his other work?
Well, he's a lot like Edward Zwick, actually, in that he never tries to do the same thing twice. Edward Zwick, I mean, okay, maybe not so much like Edward Zwick, because Edward Zwick did Last Samurai, Glory, Defiance, which are all films that are tied by this theme of, you know, massive events and people trying to...
But you are right, though, in your original assessment that they are very different films.
They're different He's more like Danny Boyle, because yeah. Danny Boyle will strike out at a variety of genres. And Blood Diamond. Edward Zwick sticks to similar genres, but he did do About Last Night, and he did do The Siege. The Siege, yes. Which was, you know, a pretty different film for him. And a film that, if I may say so, is simplistic, but also kind of ahead of its time.
No, I haven't seen it, so I definitely will.
I would recommend it. That said, he's more like Danny Boyle. He never does the same thing twice. Tale of Two Sisters, which is the film that brought him to prominence, is a horror film, but a very subtle one that kind of underplays. It's melodramatic. It's a melodrama. It's a horror film, but it's not what you'd expect from Asian horror, or it's not the way that Asian horror... It's different from the typical Asian horror film. Then you have... Just going out of order, then you have The Good, the Bad, the Weird, which is this massive Western set piece that feels like like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, directed by Michael Bay.
That's probably one of the best titles I've heard of like the last 10 years. The Good, the Bad, and the Weird. I mean, right? I want to see it. Would you recommend that movie?
I would absolutely recommend it. It features one of the most impressive chase sequences I've ever seen, with a cast of probably 100 or so people. Absolutely immersive. And then you have The Host, which is a monster movie, but it's also a really subversive one that kind of indirectly faults America at first for creating this monster. And then it's not really a movie about the monster. It's a movie about how a dysfunctional family bands together to rescue their youngest from the monster. It's a really interesting movie.
That's the thing, is all those films sound very interesting. And I know this director comes with an incredible amount of acclaim. Like, he has a high regard amongst American critics.
He's one of the cult favorites from South Korea, along with, Chan-wook Park, who is best known as the director of the Vengeance trilogy, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, Old Boy, and Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, called Lady Vengeance, over in the States, as well as Thirst, I'm a Cyborg, But That's Okay, and just a variety of films. He's making his American debut relatively soon, I think. And the third director, whose name unfortunately I can't remember, but I assigned one of the films to you. It was called Memories of Murder. And this director really fascinates me. And he most recently did Mother.
You know what? I'm going to have to say, looking back, I know at first I seemed somewhat critical in my assessment of Memories of Murder. But thinking back, that movie, just the more I think about it, I haven't watched it against it, I really enjoyed it. And you know what it was? I put it up against Zodiac, which is unfair because I personally really like that film. But I thought this movie, since you recommended it, would be more like Memories of a Murder. And Memories of a Murder is so much more complex. It's so layered.
Absolutely. But this movie does what it does well.
Yeah, I will give you that. I
didn't enjoy it personally. I also didn't find it funny. I saw it by myself. But I didn't find it funny. I found it...
Well, don't feel bad. I saw Drive Angry 3D by myself at like midnight, which was a very sad experience.
It reminds me of when I saw The Fitfust Way.
Was that movie good?
Fist Foot. Oh, God. I'm stumbling over my words here. Fitfust... I just did it again. Fist Foot Way, yeah. With Danny McBride. It was awful. I hated it. But I saw it with like 12 people in this huge theater at AMC 25 in Times Square on this massive screen. It's surreal because you're just sitting there. You're like, this movie is shot in 16mm, maybe, I think. Yeah. Maybe it's digital. It looks awful. And you have it projected on this giant screen and you're watching it with 12 other people. I was also sick at the time, so it was just a really weird experience.
Wow.
What was weirder is that before that I saw the Jackie Chan Jet Li pairing, Forbidden Kingdom.
Wait a minute, before we go further, we're starting to go major tangent here.
Yes, we are.
I saw The Devil. It's just, you know what it was for me? I'm going to say a few like closing things here. The film is just so beautifully shot. Everything is well composed. The guy has some very inventive staging, and there's a lot behind that. Like, I'm sure if I sat down and wrote an opinion piece just based off like the meaning behind certain framings, I would really get into it. But then what I'd be leaving out is the ideology of it, and that it's just high gloss torture porn to me, obviously, because I'm the one saying it. But to me, I couldn't let that go. And I'm sure if I had been able to let that go, maybe I would have found it funny.
Okay. And you vocalized my thoughts exactly pretty much, and which is why this is shorter than our usual breakdown, but that said...
Would you recommend the movie to anyone, though? Like, are there any...
I actually did, just today. I recommended it to a friend of mine. I said, go ahead and watch this. I'm really interested to hear what you have to say on it, because he's a horror junkie. And he's seen films that I won't come close to, because, frankly, their concepts are unpleasant.
Mm.
But you, one of your favorite films is it Salo?
Salo, which is the most grotesque movie I've ever seen. 120 Days of Sodom.
Yes. So, I mean, you know, I guess, why Salo and why not I Saw the Devil?
Because Salo, it actually is about, like, the breaking down of a person, like, to the degree that they use the backdrop of,
fascist
Salo.
Italy.
Yeah, fascist Italy. And the way they do it is just, you know, it's funny you say that. It's not unlike this film, because both films are beautifully composed, beautifully shot, but Salo goes to a point of no return. Like, it's just, it's beyond anything else you ever see. And because of that, it reaches this level that is like, I think that's what the director of I Saw the Devil might have been aspiring to. But Sallow, the way they broke it down, it's... Have you seen the film?
No, I haven't. That's... See, I just...
No, I just... I don't want to talk about it on the podcast for people who haven't seen
it. That's fine. So that's... Those are, I guess, our thoughts on I Saw the Devil. It's playing now at IFC Center. I don't know if it'll be playing elsewhere. I'm pretty sure it's unrated. I may be wrong. I would be surprised if it got an R rating, because that's... It's the kind of movie that barely gets away with an R rating, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, that said, we're going to play you a piece by Roberta Poveda. Is that right? Piece by Roberta Poveda. I hope you enjoy it, and we'll be right back with our soundtrack segment, and then we'll talk to you about Love and Other Drugs.
Está mal, ella no tiene otra necesidad, mamá, de seguir mal, ella no tiene otra necesidad, mamá, fiebre, desarréglame de todos los sentidos. Arréglame de todos los sentidos, Yarie. Ella está bien, ella está mala, la la. Ella no tiene otra oportunidad. Ella está bien, ella está mala, la la. Ella no tiene otra oportunidad.
And we're back. That was Roberta Poveda, a piece by Roberta Poveda. You can check out his music. I think he's on MySpace.
Yes, he's on MySpace.
You can check him out on MySpace, or you can just Google him. It's Roberto, which is like Rob, but with an E-R-T-O. Poveda is P-O-V-E-D-A. And now, moving on to our soundtrack segment, would you like to go first?
Sure. For mine, I went with it's the movie Badlands, which I'm a huge fan of that movie, and the song is Love is Strange by Mickey and Sylvia. It only plays like a 20-second, 25-second clip of it. Have you seen Badlands?
No, I have not.
Okay, did you see the clip I posted on
Facebook? No, I did not, because I avoided, because I plan to see Terrence Malick films in their entirety as they are.
Have you
I
seen Days of Heaven?
No, but I've seen The Thin Red Line. I found it very excruciatingly boring, but I was very young at the time.
Wow. Oh, okay. All right. No, it's just I got to tell you, that's like one of my favorite films. Days of Heaven actually is my favorite film.
Ever? Period?
Yeah. No, people often tell me they don't like it, and it's not like I don't want to punch them in the face, but I just think they should like fall down at least one flight of stairs. Something like that.
Okay.
All right.
Do you want to talk about the scene a little bit?
Yeah, why not? All right. So it's Love is Strange, and the song is it's been in Dirty Dancing, and it was in Casino. So most people would know it from Dirty Dancing, but it's actually played in Badlands. And the scene it's in takes place right around the middle of the movie when Kit and God, what is her name now? It's Sissy Spacek's character, but
see, there Holly. You go again with just what? Not remembering female characters.
God, I
check
know.
Check out it's our promo, by the way. We're going to have it up real soon. It's actually two promos. The first one, which was... forgotten and left in the vaults, and now it's back.
We taped it 2 years ago. We had a director fly over. They were German. They couldn't speak English. We can't speak German, and you know, it just it was
communication errors. And then it was It was intended to be more artistic, and maybe the message of the actual podcast got lost along the way. You know
what
it
was? We should have researched before what part of Germany he was from, because he was East German, and he had maintained that, like, East German filmmaking style.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm going to assume that you're right.
No,
you talked to him more than I did.
Yeah, the clip will be online, and you'll see Heinrich's work. Maybe we should have gone with the new director, which we did for our real promo.
Right, and we can't mention names. Really, you know, it was a big name, big Hollywood guy, and he just came over and shot this incredible 3D promo. Well, actually, you know, if you have the glasses at home, put them on, watch the promo, and, you know, maybe it'll be in 3D. Anyway, moving on.
All right, sorry. Back to it. The names, it's Kit Carruthers and it's Holly, and the film Badlands is based on the Starkweather homicides, and at the point in the movie where Love is Strange is played, it takes place when Kit and Holly have created this utopia in the woods, and they've run away from society, and they're living on their own. And Kit, who's much older than Holly, he's kind of shown her how to get around in the woods, and he plays the role of hunter-gatherer. She's the role of the homemaker, which is tough on her because she's younger. And the scene happens, and it's really sweet, and it's a funny song, and it fits the era. And it's just such a, like, beautiful moment in a beautiful but very sad film, and I really felt like Terrence Malick encapsulates Holly's innocence in this scene, because the scene starts with you see her feet, and then you see Kit's cowboy boots, and the way they're dancing, it's just so 1950s, and I'm a huge fan of the scene, I'm a huge fan of the song, and I love the way it was used in Badlands. Mark, let's talk about your soundtrack segment.
My soundtrack segment. My pick is 1995 film La Haine. Hate.
You got it. Because I always want to call it La Haine.
And I always mispronounce it. I didn't know the H was silent until I looked into it. But yeah, Matthew Kasowitz's debut film. One of the strongest debuts I've ever seen in my life. My short life.
Still though, I can back you up on this excellent film.
And this film is a snapshot of life in Parisian ghettos. Not ghettos in the sense that when you think back to 20th century, you think World War II, you think ghettos. But they're called, there's a French word for it, but it's not coming to mind. Write us in, Brooklyn Film Theorists, BK Film Theorists, with an S, .blogspot.com, if you know what it is. Banlieue, it's Banlieue. See, you don't have to write us in, but check it out anyway. That's the word used for these ghettos, these low-income, impoverished areas. Yeah. And the song that I picked is actually, it's a DJ, and it's a mix of Edith Piaf's most famous song, Je ne regrette rien, I regret nothing, and KRS-One's Sound of the Police. And everyone knows Sound of the Police. Song goes, woo, woo.
It's the sound of the police.
There you go. Everybody knows it, except Rob, our producer, is shaking his head. Now, that said, if you don't know it, you probably heard it in the Cop Out trailer. I'm a trailer whore. I guess we don't have to bleep that out.
No, you are.
That said, I just drew a blank. But what happens in this scene is this DJ scratches out a mix between Edith Piaf and KRS-One, and the camera just goes out the window and floats over the project. And it's this incredible scene because it's a top-down view. It's a bird's eye view. Yeah. And you just go with it, and the music kind of gets quieter and quieter as you get further away. And you just understand. He opens his windows. He cracks the windows, and he puts these big, massive speakers out. And he just mixes, and he's really, like, it's a great mix. It's so cool. It's just so, it's so fresh to this day.
We got
to
talk about the look of the film, because the film is black and white. It's high contrast.
They couldn't afford color.
Very street.
But I'm just kidding. It's intentionally
black. But no, it's a beautifully shot film. Unlike, like, let's say Clerks, that's something where you can tell, okay, black and white, low budget, it's shot kind of poorly.
I think Lion is also low budget, but for some reason it looks astounding.
Well, I mean, like, I'm a huge Cassavetes fan, and even if you don't like the handheld, I would say Killing of a Chinese Bookie is, like, amazingly shot film, you know? So, like, there's, you can do a lot.
Well, there's a lot of handheld work in Lain, but there's also a lot of just steady, like, right on, very specifically blocked shots.
No, Lahane looks like a big budget.
Yes,
like,
it does. A prestigious, a big budget film, which it is small prestigious scale film. Yeah,
yeah.
So that's my pick.
Excellent pick. I wish you. Are you going to see Badlands at some point?
Yes, I intend to.
Okay.
There's one way you can get me to see Badlands. You can make it my homework assignment.
That is true. I might have to switch.
We're the bringing script that up. Back, by the way. We're bringing back the homework assignments. If you have any suggestions for us, you can email us individually. You can email me at cinefile88. It's cinefile88@gmail.com. Rick?
Or it's Rick Rosette, RickRosette@gmail.com. One thing I do want to point out is I'm more of like a classic Hollywood buff, and Mark, you're more into, like,
I guess international cinema.
International cinema. And you've seen a lot of modern movies.
Yes, like, I have. I mean, it's just, I find pacing is an issue for me in older films, I'm sorry to say. And occasionally certain classics just don't go over as well due to pacing and style of performances. But modern films, you know, it's just growing up in the 90s.
No, you don't have to make excuses. I'm a huge fan of modern films. I just find, like, I'm more into TCM. That said, if you, the listener, have any, like, homework assignments you'd like to give us, I'm always interested in finding out about new movies. I could use to learn more about modern movies. If you want to suggest some classics to Mark, we definitely appreciate it. Write us in.
Beatrice, if you're listening, suggest something.
Other than King's Speech type.
We've both seen it, so, like, no, it's cool. Like, if you want stuffy British films, we'll watch, you know, we're like trained monkeys. We'll watch stuffy British films. Moving on. Yes. Edward Zwick, 2010, Love and Other Drugs. The first adult sex drama I've seen in a long time featuring
very,
major
very
Hollywood
funny,
stars.
Though, too.
Yes, very well written, sharp dialogue, really unusual, not unusual, but, like, really intense performances. I mean, Anne Hathaway is already coming off Rachel getting married, and she delivers a great performance.
You know what's funny is I was trying to think when I was watching Love and Other Drugs, and I was just saying, what else has Anne Hathaway done where she's shown this, like, acting muscle that
well,
she has?
Well, she did a little bit. She showed a little bit of it in Brokeback Mountain. Then she did Havoc. But Havoc was a big mistake. Havoc was just her way of breaking with the Princess Diaries. Havoc was a movie where she's
Freddie
sort of
Rodriguez,
like,
right?
Yes, he's in it.
Very
it's
unforgettable
sort of like,
film.
Really?
For me, like,
oh, forgettable?
Unforgettable.
Unforgettable.
Yeah,
wow.
I didn't find it very interesting. I mean,
but isn't that forgettable? You said unforgettable?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes,
so it very forgettable.
Sorry,
it is a very
forgettable
film, but
yeah.
It's also very...
Well, it was unforgettable. I'm just going to say it. Freudian slip-up. Anne Hathaway is naked in Havoc. And
somewhat. Not, like, really. Just her breasts.
Naked enough
now that we're
that,
discussing it.
Like, you know, people would know that movie for that. That being said, Love and Other Drugs, there are several sex scenes and...
Very, very... I'm so happy that there is a major studio film that has provocative sex scenes. And it's sad that in this day and age, this is what we consider provocative.
Well, it's not even just that it's provocative. I guess, I mean, because this is National Women's Day, and I don't want to dwell on this. Obviously, I know you don't, Mark. It's just like, it's a film, it's for adults. It was written by adults. It tackles, like, tough subjects. I mean, the main crux of the story is that Jake Gyllenhaal is this, like, self-absorbed playboy.
Yes. He believes that there's only one thing that he's really good at.
Picking up women.
That's right. You can call it
that. And manipulating them. Well, manipulating
women.
Yes.
And he locks out, sort of, and he becomes a salesman. He becomes a pharmaceutical salesman for Pfizer, which is an actual corporation. And he's put under the wing. He goes to Ohio, and he's put under the wing of Oliver Platt. Great character.
Yeah, I was thinking, I wrote that down. This movie
nobody
actually
says damn like Oliver Platt.
This movie also has Hank Azaria.
Oh, yeah, and George Segal.
Yeah, he just great
appears for a little
character
bit.
Actors.
Yeah, just a lot of decent character actors. And then his brother, who is a software millionaire, moves in with him because he has social issues and, like, social anxiety, and his wife, she's cheating on him, etc., etc. And his brother was played by Josh... Is it Josh Gaff?
You're asking the wrong guy. I have seen him in other things. He's just never left an impression.
Right.
He's kind
of
like a four-man's Jonah Hill.
In this movie, he's just the, unfortunately, the obese sidekick comic relief who will, at the near the end of the film, deliver a monologue, which he does, that kind of encapsulates how Jamie's lifestyle is wrong and how he needs to be with the one he loves. Blah, blah, blah. No big spoilers. But what's interesting about the first half of the film is that while working at Pfizer, Viagra comes on the scene. And Viagra, well, Pfizer is a real
Viagra
organization.
Viagra doesn't actually happen until about 51,
right.
52 minutes in the film.
Right. But I'm just saying, in his training, okay, let's rewind back. In his training, he meets Anne Hathaway's Maggie Murdock. And whenever I heard her name, I would think of Murdock from Daredevil.
Oh, I was going to say Murdock from A-Team, but...
See?
Wow.
Oh, that's actually better. But he runs into her, and she just sees him for what he is and gives him a really hard time, but they're both clearly attracted to each other because one of them is Jake Gyllenhaal, another one is Anne Hathaway.
Well, let's talk about the crux of the film. Anne Hathaway's character,
spoilers.
Maggie... There can be no spoilers. We have to discuss this stuff to break down the film. Sorry,
spoilers.
This is where Mark and I disagree. Mark's another Dave Chensky, you know, like these guys that have to say spoilers. This is what we do. We discuss the plot of the film so we can analyze it.
She has Parkinson's.
Anne Hathaway has Parkinson's, but the
it's
movie,
stage one.
The movie,
so like we don't have to deal with.
But it doesn't.
He doesn't
dwell
make
on
fun
that
of Parkinson's, which is great because, in the words of I think Roger Ebert, how could you make fun of Parkinson's?
People did, though, with Michael J. Fox. It wasn't like Rush Limbaugh or one of those guys.
You just answered your own question. How you have to be Rush Limbaugh to make fun of Parkinson's.
Wow. I mean, but anyways, she has stage one Parkinson's, and her whole thing is she's trying to live carefree because she's trying to make up for the fact that she knows if anyone gets close enough to her and falls in love with her, the guy will eventually run away because he's not going to want to take care of her as she moves into stage two, stage three, and
the most devastating scene in the film is Jake Gyllenhaal conversing with an elderly man whose wife has stage four Parkinson's.
He gives him such an honest,
unflinching. He says it's not a disease; it's a Russian novel, which is a great line. I mean,
it's a great scene.
Yes, the reality is, I have been fortunate enough so far in my life not to have anyone close to me be afflicted with Parkinson's. And I hope, you know, that stays the case. And this movie is kind of terrifying. And the fact that there are diseases that are incurable. And this is one of those diseases that ravages body and mind.
Feline AIDS fades. It's real.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was getting somewhere. It ravages body and mind. I have to give credit to this film for not shying away from that. I mean, Anne Hathaway's disease activates itself only when it's necessary for the plot, unfortunately. But the fact that the movie moves to embrace her condition in a really intelligent way makes it a very, very good film. Even if it suffers, and here we're going to get into our criticism naturally.
Well, I don't think Jake Gyllenhaal can handle the heavy dramatic moments in the film, in the latter portion of the film. I don't think he came on screen with enough, like it's not even his effort, it's a matter of his presence. And this is something that goes to the core of acting in that, name me one great Jake Gyllenhaal performance.
Jarhead. Features of
I
really
have not
excellent
seen Jarhead,
Jake
so I
Gyllenhaal
can't say.
Performance.
Okay, I thought you were going to say Brokeback.
Brokeback does as well, but he's completely overshadowed by the late great.
Is that a great performance, though?
I think it's a really difficult performance, and I think he does the best he can with it. But personally, Jarhead features a good one. Rendition has a good performance, which I don't think you've seen. I'd be surprised if you did.
Well, no, it's always on cable, but it's one of those.
It's actually surprisingly
stars.
Decent. It's
okay,
surprisingly
so I should
decent.
Watch it?
It's not a great film, but it posed some interesting questions about how bad we are towards terrorists, who may or may not be terrorists.
I prefer when I want to watch.
I'm being
American
simplistic.
Terrorism
it's actually
films.
Significantly more complex than that. The Siege is also about how.
I was
going to
go The Kingdom. Have you seen The Kingdom?
Yes, I have.
There are so many things wrong
Kingdom.
With that, but
yes.
I still enjoy that movie.
I don't like The Kingdom, but I really like its intro sequence, which educates people on our relationship with Saudi Arabia and features some really, really brave juxtapositions. The Israeli flag fades into one of the stars on the American flag, and most famously in the intro, the graph that's used to represent our oil, that we're the biggest buyer of oil in the world in 2001, turns into the Twin Towers. Just it transforms into them, and you see a plane just cascading towards them. Cascading is the wrong word. Anyway. And yes. Then we're into the kingdom, which turns out to be just kind of like a subpar.
Whoa. Flip. Slow down. See, for me, I would take the kingdom any day over shoot 'em up. This always goes back to
what
shoot 'em up.
No. Hold on.
Yes. You have, I know, an agenda. We're talking Love and Other Drugs.
You have an agenda against this movie, and I'm putting an end to it right now. You cannot compare the kingdom to shoot 'em up. Shoot 'em up.
They're both action
films. Promise.
They're both
action
films.
Both action films. The Kingdom deals with socio-political issues, and even if it's a simplistic action film, you still have that background. Shoot 'em Up makes no promises of being even mildly intelligent.
No, it does the opposite. It does the opposite. It says,
5 minutes, you see Clive Owen stab a man in the eye with a carrot. I'm sorry, not an eye. In the throat, which he proceeds to drive further until it comes out of the back of his neck.
Yes.
And you're comparing that to The Kingdom, which...
Yes, they're both action films. Why shouldn't I...
Because one...
Why should Shoot 'em Up be given a pass? Because it's supposed to be stupid?
Yes.
I get it. Oh, so why didn't you like Drive Angry 3D then?
It wasn't stupid enough.
Are you kidding me? Wait. The Kingdom, which at least has like lofty goals, but
what
falls short of them
on an ideological lofty goals. What
it's
are the Kingdom's lofty goals?
It's trying to show what the soldiers go through, which is like
what soldiers? Jamie Foxx?
Jamie Foxx, Jason Bateman, Jennifer Garner.
Oh, those,
she's funny.
Chris Cooper. When I think of American soldiers, that's who I think of.
They're like a special ops tactical team.
They're very
team.
Special.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? All right.
They're movie stars. I never lose that. I never lose the fact they're movie stars. And whatever amount of danger they're going to be in, it's a Hollywood movie.
What about the scene where they're going to cut off Jason Bateman's head?
It's Jason Bateman. Like, I can't get over
oh
that.
Oh, my God. So, are you
also,
kidding
it has
me?
Such a great trailer set to Bullet the Blue Sky by U2. Check
I
that
do
trailer
love that song.
Out. Fantastic right. trailer.
Okay.
You
coming
can't,
back around.
I'm giving Shoot 'em Up a pass. You don't have to. You can keep talking shit about it.
I will, because that
okay.
movie
Love
is unwatchable.
Drugs.
Yes. Talking about a surprisingly good movie.
Yes.
Love and Other Drugs. I just want to point out that it was Edward Zwick's return. He had originally done 30-something with Marshall Hurt.
Oh, right.
Marshall
Hurt. Of course, television. I was thinking about last night with James Belushi and...
Well, he did that. That was like his
Moore.
Film breaking away from... Well, actually, 30-something
right.
went on much longer, but he started 30-something and he did that. It was like right around the same period. Anyway, coming back to the film... And there are like a lot of sitcom moments, but I thought the film was shot beautifully.
Oh yeah.
That director of photography, I would hire him for anything.
Especially porn. It's hard not to it's hard not to make jokes, but like the sex scenes.
Would you say that Anne Hathaway has never looked better? I don't think she's ever looked better. And I know you're gonna link this to the sex scenes, but what I'm talking about is
No, in general, she's absolutely everyone in that movie looks amazing. Even Oliver Platt, who's like, if he's lit poorly, he looks like a sack of flesh. Kind of like so occasionally you'll see Oliver Platt have like a Mickey Rourke thing going on.
Oh, God.
But everybody in this movie looks fantastic.
And then there's a lot of like circular tracking shots
mm-hmm.
and a lot
it's
of.
It's a very graceful film. It's a very graceful film.
Yeah, no,
and it's not noticeable because oftentimes you'll see romantic comedy, as long as it's lit brightly and everybody wears bright colors. You just give it a pass. Like, you look at Knocked Up, that is not an attractive-looking movie. You use the same color scheme that all Judd Apatow movies tend to use, and you just give it a pass. Because if a romantic comedy looks like shit, you're not going to care, because you're not
that's
there
not,
to look
that's
at a cinematography.
That's 100% not true.
Okay.
I would say that Knocked Up is shot so poorly, like, it's noticeable at times.
Ah.
Whereas there are some romantic comedies that are shot really well, and they break that like flat lighting mold, and I feel like this is one of them. Love and
what's
Other
another
Drugs.
One? What's another one?
God, I just do you know what?
Cain and Leopold.
No, there's this really bad movie that just came out recently with Josh Duhamel, and
is it like we Kristen expected.
Bell? Yeah, it's like the main. Oh no, the girl from Grey's Anatomy.
Catherine
Heigl. I wasn't going to watch any of it. Catherine Heigl.
It's, Life or Something Like It is Angelina Jolie is a reporter.
Life
who's
as We
died
Know
of
It?
Cancer.
Is this Life as
no,
We Know It?
No.
Oh, God, there's so many just
Rob,
like this. Rob, do you know what movie we're talking about?
It's the one with the baby in the billboard, right?
Yes, there's
yeah,
a baby.
And the baby's running around and Josh Duhamel is drinking a beer
is
in his boxers.
Is that how you say his name?
I don't know. I don't care.
Either way, that film is shot surprisingly well. Let's call it
We Are Expecting.
We'll call it We Are Expecting. We Are Expecting is shot surprisingly well. And it ties back into this, like, Edward Zwick was smart enough to know this is not his strength, so he brought a DP in who could shoot everything very beautifully.
Who is the DP?
I think his name's Steve Schierberg. He's part of the, like, Society of Cinematographers.
The Jewish Society of Cinematographers.
There's a lot. That's quite the society. If you're gonna pull that card, then
I'm gonna pull the J-Code.
That's like 70% of the
ACS. Well, there it is. There it is. Got some talented folks working over in Hollywood.
Let's do it. All right. What do you give the film 1 to 10?
Seven. A solid seven. I enjoyed it. It collapses into just really, really simplistic romantic drama ending where you outrun, or person A outruns person B on the way to someplace and gives him the speech that summarizes the whole point of the movie, and he or she apparently come up with it on the spot because they had, you know,
that is a good point.
The thinking process clearly happens in minutes or even seconds, and all of it is laid out and life is clear. Anyway, that said, for the first hour and a half before you have that result, you have a really interesting movie that mixes this idea of how the medical industry just takes advantage of everyone in it, worst of all, of course, the patients, as well as this almost parody of what's happening to the world at large when they get a hold of the little blue pill that can make your penis just...
Blue Diamonds, isn't that what it's...
Isn't? Wow, that's a great... I never heard that.
Yeah,
that's a
it's
fantastic,
in like rap songs and whatnot, yeah.
That's where I go for like social commentary.
Pretty much, yeah. This day and age, sadly. All right, sorry.
What would you give it?
I would give it... You're going to make me feel bad because I only gave it 2.5, but it kind of fluctuated between 2.5 and 3 stars. I did enjoy it. There are several issues, as Mark says. Like at the end, Jake Gyllenhaal does that... spoilers. 5 minutes. I just need 5 minutes, and then, you know, he gives this, like, great speech in 5 minutes, and at that point, I was
kind of
like...
I'm kind of astounded that she, like, had a problem stopping the bus when he was driving, and you know what's funny? I kept waiting for his car to crash.
Because
I think
that would
be fantastic, because he's not looking, and his car crashes, and he dies, and we watch her wither away. No, that would be awful.
That would
see,
be the I Saw the Devil. That would be the Korean
The
revenge.
Korean version of Love and Other Drugs. That would be the ending.
Nice.
Anyway.
No, just for me, I thought it was beautifully shot. I thought the beginning was edited somewhat poorly, like there's a few too many cuts, but the film settles in and comes along. I did find some issues with Jake Gyllenhaal's acting. I thought Anne Hathaway was extremely credible. I look forward to seeing her act in other projects in the future. And I would definitely recommend the movie. Anyone that wants like a good date movie that has like some drama, this is it.
Okay. Homework,
you go first.
Okay. Next week, we are doing Battle LA. And
sadly.
Four Lions.
Awesomely.
I'd like you to go see Monsters, since I'm in Netflix Instant Play. It's the Gareth Edwards film. He did it with... District 9 cost $30 million without P&A. This film cost $15,000 to rent the equipment and $500,000 to produce. Gareth Edwards, who is a British filmmaker, this is his debut film. He did all the visual effects himself on a laptop using store-bought software. And it was shot on location in Central America, Costa Rica, and Mexico. It's a very similar concept to District 9. But while District 9 is a kind of really impressive Hollywood set piece film with a unique international sensibility, this film is a character drama where the backdrop is a sci-fi film. And I found it very moving. I found the performances really impressive, very different from what you usually get. And although there are occasional plot missteps that are required to get the characters into a situation where they arrive in, there's a genuine sense of wonder and mystery. It's almost like an early Spielberg film. I have to give it credit, and I recommend you see it.
Wow. That, I mean...
I sold you.
Yeah, you did. Well, you had me kind of on the fence because... I'm not a fan of District 9. I am a fan of its ideology. I'm not a fan of the way it was shot. It kind of has this like documentary style.
It's a pseudo-documentary style.
It breaks and becomes a Hollywood movie.
Yes.
Then it goes back to being a documentary at the end somehow. You're like, oh, wait.
It starts as a documentary and then kind of just the bottom falls out because you're still watching a quote-unquote documentary, but it's not anymore. Who's holding the camera?
There's so many questions.
Anyway, that said...
This movie had me with the early Spielberg. I mean, we're talking Jaws.
It feels like the closest kin, and this is a big compliment to Monsters, is Encounters of the...
Third Kind.
Yes.
Excellent film.
It's not at all like that film, but there's the same sense of stepping into something unknown and really just witnessing, especially towards the end. There's a scene that's very well known for the film that's very much like a moment where people appreciate something that's not of this earth.
Is it any way at all like... Sorry to keep going back to this. This is 28 Days Later. I saw some footage online that they kind of like... I don't know. I just got like this 28 Days Later vibe.
Not at all. Okay. It's when Gareth Edwards set out to make it, he said he wanted to show what would happen after. Not the invasion part, but what would happen after the aliens had settled in, how the world had more than reacted. The world just settled into it, just like the aliens did.
It's like Alien Nation? Sorry, I just keep throwing movies at you.
I've never seen Alien Nation. It's not a great movie. It's not like Alien Nation. See, okay. Rob has been nodding this whole time. I take it he's a big fan of the film. So
you've seen Monsters?
Yeah.
Wow. So I'm the one on the outside looking in.
Well,
all
I
right.
just saw it this week, and I really enjoyed it.
For your homework, I'm going to go with Olivier Assayas's Carlos. It was my favorite film of 2010.
It's 5.5 hours. I'll gladly see Carlos.
Guys, I know what you're saying. I don't have 5.5 hours. If you don't have time to see this movie, then you don't deserve to go to sleep. You know what? Watch this movie, then sleep for 2.5 hours.
Drink 4 Loco. A lot of 4 Loco. Or don't. Because
if you don't
4 Loco
like
is very bad for you. Please don't drink 4 Loco. But see this movie.
Carlos is just, it's magnificently shot. Edgar Ramirez gives the performance of 2010, potentially... It's just one of those performances that's going to stick with me my whole life. Everyone talks about Meryl Streep and Sophie's Choice. It's not unlike that level.
Nicolas Cage and Wicker Man.
Nick Cage and Leaving Las Vegas.
Yes.
Nicolas Cage and Leaving Las Vegas.
Nicolas Cage and Ghost Rider. Nicolas Cage and Drive Angry. Nicolas Cage.
Valley Girl.
Nicolas Cage in Valley Girl. Nicolas Cage in
Bad Lieutenant.
Raising Arizona.
He's great in
Arizona. I just want to throw a good one out there for once. Anyways, we're the Brooklyn Film Theorists. Today is Tuesday, March 8th, International Women's Day. Hey, ladies. What's happening?
Mark, you're going to have to stop. That's one thing about the movie Carlos, which I was trying to tell you about, is just that he's a ladies' man. The film looks great. It's shot handheld, telephoto lenses. It's incredibly tough. They pull it off. Mark, I don't
know.
Good
night, Rick. Let me shake your hand here.
All right.
There's handshaking going on. You can check us out at BK Film Theorists with an S, .blogspot.com or on iTunes. The promos, both the German promo and the most recent Hollywood special edition unrated promo will be up hopefully in the next couple of days. And we look forward to hearing from you. Please write. That's it. Have a good night, everyone. Good night, Rick.
Mark, I just wanted to say you can follow me, twitter.com/RickRosette. Hit up the blog. I'll be putting posts up there. I've got a review coming of Cold Weather, and then I've got an article coming up of what I call theater whoring. It is a problem. You can fix it. I myself am afflicted.
Unsolicited sex in the theater. I totally...
Well,
absolutely. I also have an article coming out. It just came out called Kill the Irishman. God, that's so stupid. It's a review of Kill the Irishman. It's over at obsessedwithfilm.com. Should still be on the front page. I'm reviewing Birdemic. I'm reviewing a film called Leaving. And I'm reviewing a film called Step Off from the producer of...
Step Up 3D?
No, see, I thought the same thing. It's actually another masterpiece. It's called You Got Served. You may have heard of it.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm really... Yes, you know his name. I'm really looking forward to that.
If you don't think I know my dance movies, then you don't know what's what.
And on that note... On that note, we're the Brooklyn Film Theorists. Have a good night.
Cause I bring the gospel, brand new testament. It's one sentence long, it don't please long, this diamond. You see, I go, 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 call me King or El Presidente. Uh-huh. But I go by sometimes I'm called Sensei.